Speaking of those Warriors, Ramona, what do you think they're going to do this offseason?
Well, I think we'll know a lot more when we see what happens with Kuminga. You know, does he really have a market outside of, I know there's a couple of teams that are interested in him, but those would be sign-in trades. They don't have the cap space to get it done. And so do the Warriors want to even participate in those sign-in trades? If they do, what's the number? You know, it's probably three or four teams I've heard of that have some level of interest, but what is that level of interest, right? And do the Warriors want to keep him? And if so, what is the number? Is he going to, you know, if they make him an offer, that's less than the max or maybe even less than what he was offered last year, which I think is far more likely. Does he scoff at that and then take a really long time to make a decision and then tie up their cap space? And that presents other problems. So I think that's the biggest thing that you have to look for, you know, but I know that they're working on a few things. I don't expect anything massive like we've seen. I mean, Jimmy Butler was really that move, right? But the Kuminga question is going to hang over everything because it has the potential to get messy.
Yeah, it could get messy, and like you said, it could drag out. And if it drags out, then the Warriors kind of don't get to be players in the general marketplace anyway. But outside of Kuminga, is there anything that the Warriors can do that can upgrade their roster, or is it really just going to be a case of waiting for Kuminga and then trying to fill in around that?
There's a couple of teams that I think you should watch closely, right? Memphis is this interesting team right now that doesn't bane trade. It's got everybody kind of wondering what they're up to. You know, they have Ja Morant on that team. They have Jaren Jackson Jr. He's due for a giant extension. I believe that they're going to pay him, but until they do it, I'm going to watch that one really close. And so is everyone else in the league. Right. But I also think that there's just a lot of guys out there that could help them, they're going to have to be creative on how to get, but I think they obviously want to upgrade the interior defense, right? They want to add a really good center, for defensive and offensive reasons, you know. Like last year they were after Nick Vucevic, right? In Chicago, there's, you know, he's not a great defensive center, but he gives them a stretch threat. So I could see them revisiting something like that. But there's a lot of teams that are looking for a decent center, right? The Lakers are doing the same thing, you know, just saw Dallas tied up Daniel Gafford. So that's, you know, it would seem like there's a lot of centers out there that are available, but, there's not that many really good ones. And that's where I would look for the Warriors.
Ramona Shelburne, ESPN. Hey, real quick, what did you think of the KD trade?
Oh my gosh, Houston is scary now.
Right?
I thought that was great for Houston. I mean, I don't, my guy John Gambadoro in Phoenix keeps saying Bradley Beal won't be back on that team. Like, they're going to buy him out. They're going to trade him. We'll see. I believe him. He's really dialed in there in Phoenix. So to me, that really does affect how I view this trade with the Rockets, because if Bradley Beal is still on the team, why do they need Jalen Green? I mean, he's sort of redundant with Booker anyway, and now you have another perimeter player who's not a great defender and kind of needs the ball in his hand, but not a true point guard. I mean, yep. It's just another awkward fit, so I don't know why they prioritize that. I don't quite understand why they didn't get their picks back or like insist on Jabari Smith or even get an extra piece like Cam Whitmore. Like there was just extra things they could have gotten. I like that they got Dylan Brooks. That's good for them. They need a defender, but I mean, for Houston, they get off Jalen Green's contract. That's a win. And they get KD.
Right.
I mean,
right.
Whoa. And they get to keep all their good young pieces, and they got to keep their draft picks some of which are Phoenix's draft picks. Like, that was a hell of an upgrade for Houston without having to give up much. And I thought the whole thing was really interesting to watch the leverage game, right? Because, you know, Phoenix, they messed up. They tried to trade KD without working with him at the deadline. He nixed the idea of going back to Golden State. And now all of a sudden they offended him. And so, you know, he wasn't going to stay there. So you lose the leverage of like, just keeping him on the team, right? Like, you lose that leverage. And he has this ability to, he has 1 year left and could sign a 2 year extension. So he doesn't, like, if you trade him to a place he doesn't want to go, they're not going to give up that much for a guy that doesn't want to go there. And I think there were a couple teams that were really thinking about it. Like, do we just roll the dice and hope he stays, you know? Like Toronto's thinking about it. I thought it was in Shams reported that Cleveland thought about it. That's interesting. Minnesota was the big one for me. Like, if he's not interested in Minnesota, does it, you know, how do they, just take a swing anyway? I mean, they did that with Mike Conley and that worked out really well. So I thought that those were the really interesting what ifs to that trade, because that would have really changed those teams. And then of course Miami. I mean, I think that would have been a great fit in Miami, especially now with the Eastern Conference that's just decimated by injuries.
Ramona, thank you for the picture. And
is that a great picture?
It's a great shot. So great. Yeah, it looks like partly cloudy skies, but a nice day in Denver.
And the plane that was pulling away from the gate, that was the one that they closed the door on me.
Oh, that's the one that was the one that got away, huh?
Isn't that sad? That got away.
Yeah, that is. But now you have some extra time to yourself, and if you want to call in again at 5:45, you can. We'll still be here.
Yeah, we're here.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, for me, my voice is a little scratchy, my energy's a little low, but I made sense for the most part, right?
No, you totally did. Awesome. Yeah, you didn't.
I mean, there was a few parts where I was like talking, and I was like, "What was the question again?" There was a few spots.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Like,
right.
You can say whatever you say, and it doesn't matter at a certain point what we
came out. I was like, I don't know what he first asked me, but you know, we're just gonna keep going with this.
I thought, coherent is a word that could describe what just happened. Absolutely,
That is not a high bar to clear, and yet I am proud of it.
But you did it. You did it anyway. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Okay, take the load off and get home safe, Ramona.
I'm putting my shoes back on.
All right.
I'm afraid someone's going to recognize me.
If you must. All right.
See you guys.
Thanks, Ramona. Okay, there she is. Ramona Shelburne at ESPN. Yeah. In a classic, she didn't have to, but she did anyway.
Yeah.
I think I told her 3 hours ago. I go, you know, there's Tuesday. We could do tomorrow.
Sure.
But
when you're in an airport and you've got a 3-hour layover, like, I'm sure she's like calling all kinds of radio stations now, like, hey, Denver, I'm here. You guys want to have me on? Hey, Topeka, you guys have a show on? I'm here. Doing nothing.
You're going to sound like who's your politician?
Howard Dean.
You're gonna be,
and I'm going to go on Topeka. Yeah. And I'm going to go on to Kansas City.
Yeah, exactly.
Shoeless Mo Jackson, we'll call her. Shoeless Mo Jackson.
That was strong.
Yeah.
That's very strong.
I should have brought that to her. And she would have gotten it.
She would have loved it.
Yeah. Well, maybe when she calls back at 5:45.
She would have given us one of them smoky laughs.
Yeah. 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 Down to 2 hours and 50 minutes.
That's a good one, Dave, or whatever your
name
is.
Totally right. It's, you know.
No, I was hoping she'd call at 5:45 because she's going to sound like Bruce Bochy by then. I mean, honestly, Houston got over on one.
Hey, Mark, this is Boach.
Hey, Boach.
And she says she's in the Denver airport, but we're actually closer to Denver than she is in the Denver airport. For those of you who have never been to the Denver airport, that thing is in flipping Nebraska. It's a good hour east,
like
minimum.
Just so everyone gets it, it's the San Francisco 49ers.
Oh, exactly.
San Francisco.
Pretty much the same thing, right?
49ers.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
So when you're in the Denver airport, you might as well be in Santa Clara.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I think that the big takeaway there, she started it by saying what we already know. It's the same thing that Mike Dunleavy said, Bobby Marks said. This whole thing hinges on Kuminga, but she's the first one to say, this could get messy. This could get very messy.
Right.
3 or 4 teams known to have interest in Kuminga, none of them at the level of like, we're going to come in and just break you off a big check. They would be sign and trade possibilities. Do the Warriors want to do that? Do they want him on the team? These are questions that at this point don't have obvious answers, even to those tapped in. Right. Do they even want him on the team?
Well, and the messy part for me is the timeline, because when free agency begins and, you know, other teams are able to make an offer to him that they could either match or not match, if that doesn't happen, well, then if you're Kuminga, you're going to get into a spot where you want to negotiate. And if the Warriors are saying, we'll give you 4 years and $60 million, and he's like, no, that's going to be a no from me, dog, then if it's an ongoing back and forth, then the Warriors are going to watch all this other stuff happen, right? Like trades and free agency and deals and signings. And meanwhile, you're kind of sitting there waiting for a Kuminga resolution. So that to me is where it might get messy.
Yep.
Is if, you know, you get to July 7th, 9th, 11th, 12th, July 16th, and everything else is done and dusted, and now you're sitting here waiting for Kuminga?
Well, and you also have competing interests. You have two people who right now are on the same side, but they have competing interests. Jonathan Kuminga wants what? He wants money and playing time.
Yep.
It's two things that the Warriors are probably going to be hesitant to offer. However, they're in charge because of that R word, restricted.
Yep.
So, yeah, it could absolutely get messy. All right, George Kontos is going to join us, but we'll push him a few minutes so that we can bat this around a little bit and hear from you. 888-957-9570. Chris in the city. Hi, Chris. What's up?
Hey, fellas. Long-time listener. Glad to be on you guys' show. You guys do a great job.
Thank you, Chris.
I called in earlier this morning, actually, on my way to work, and spoke to Butcher Boy regarding one question regarding, like, what's going on with the athletes getting injured in the NBA.
Yep.
And one of the questions that Joe had mentioned was that, and I would love to get you guys' take on it, is the young athletes these days are being pushed too hard at a young age, and that the NBA should try and skew or come up with a system where they change up and adjust to them based on, you know, how hard they're working at a young age and how much they, you know, they play compared to, you know, back in the, you know, 90s and early 2000s when kids played. And I played back in the early 90s. I played with some of the guys that were in the NBA with, like, Deshaun Stevenson and the Lopez boys. And I guess what I'm trying to say is I played like the motion offense where we, you know, were constantly running, constantly moving a lot. And, you know, I saw a lot of these kids play hard. And a lot of them went to the NBA and didn't really have these type of injuries. So I guess I wanted to get you guys to take, is it more the fact that they're playing too hard, or is it more that we need to change it, or is it just a physical thing where maybe the fitness or the strength and conditioning may play a part? I'd love to take to hear you guys' comments on here.
Chris, thanks. I mean, I think you bring up some very, very fair kind of arenas, if you will, where we can talk about this. And you know, you mentioned are the kids at a young age being pushed too hard, playing too many games? I believe yes. But there are a lot of opinions out there. Some people talk about how the game itself is pushing a little bit harder. A lot of people talk about the footwear. Does it grab too much? What about the fact that you're not wearing high tops anymore? Ramona brought up one thing that we always hear about, which is the schedule is too long. I personally have a hard time with that one because the schedule has kind of always been the schedule. So what's happening now with athletes in better shape, bigger, stronger, faster, paying attention to what they eat more, all of the health aspects, yet they're getting hurt more. To me, this all boils down to one word, and then you get to pick where you want to attack the word. But the word is overuse. So you can attack that where you want. Is 82 games too many? Is four rounds in the playoffs too many? Is the overuse happening when they're 11 years old? Is the overuse happening in the offseason where there's either an Olympics or a FIBA or a WBC or a who knows what seemingly going on every season? You can pick wherever you want. For me, I pick the offseason because that's what it's called, the offseason. I don't even know why that word exists anymore. Because the first three letters of offseason are inaccurate. Nobody turns it off. It's the on season. It's just a different version of it. That's where I would attack it, but that means you're going to individuals and the AAU world and trying to get different behavior, which is not realistic, quite frankly. But I don't think I'm going to suddenly shorten the schedule. It's not realistic anyway. The owners won't do it.
No, never. And you're not going to limit the playoffs. In fact, they've actually expanded it to where now we have the play-in tournament.
Exactly.
Because we want more teams and we want this one-and-done phenomenon to get a team to actually get into the playoffs. And so there are not only more games, there's more playoff games. And for me, it comes down to the root cause for me is youth basketball, and it's what we have now with, you know, AAU and the rest of it. Because, yeah, the off season is not always like it was last summer for Steph and, you know, Halliburton. And you had Tatum, who also was, I guess, allegedly on the Olympic team. But, like, Nikola Jokic, he didn't get hurt. SGA, he didn't get hurt. And so these are guys who also went through the Olympic cycle and, you know, all the rest of them. And you had, Dylan Brooks was a Canadian athlete, and Wembanyama was on the French team. And so it's not an automatic thing where...
No, not automatic.
Right. And like, I do think that was a little bit hurt of a different year where, you know, it was the Olympic cycle and all the rest of it. But for me, it's what Ramona was talking about, and it's also the AAU factor. I do look at, for example, Wilt Chamberlain, and we've talked about this a lot, where the 1 year that he averaged 50 a game, he actually averaged more than 48 minutes a game because they had a couple of overtimes, and so... Yeah. He almost played every minute of every single game.
Right.
And like Ramona said, you know, back in the day when we were younger watching basketball and you were a big man, you'd kind of lope down the court, you'd get to the key, you put your hand up, and you'd get the ball, and you'd make your move, and you'd shoot, and you'd rebound or whatever, and then you'd boom, boom, boom the other way. And now you watch any basketball game, any team, any player, and offense or defense, it's a lot of movement, a lot of jabs, a lot of jumps and landings and cuts and the rest of it. So I do think that the human body for an NBA player goes through a lot more now than even 10 years ago. And so that, combined with playing year-round since you were 9 or 10 years old, it adds up to be where it's, you know, going to be a catastrophic situation no matter what.
We'll let you hear again, if you're just joining us, what Ramona Shelburne said about Jonathan Kuminga and that situation here in just a moment, but do want to go to Dave in San Jose also. Hi, Dave. Thanks for calling. What's up?
Yeah, this is Dave. I had a comment about the Durant trade.
Yeah.
That I haven't heard anywhere else. He's got Olympic rings and he's medals and he's got NBA championships and he's got MVP rings. The one thing he will never have is his jersey with his name and his number lifted on any arena's rafters for all eternity. So it just seems like all the superstars, like, get to pick and choose where they want to go, but they're chasing the money. And the younger guys, the ones who are not superstars, they go where they're traded to or told to go. They don't really have a choice. So I just wanted to get your comment about that. He's not chasing his legacy. He's just chasing the money.
Well, okay, Dave, thanks very much. I don't agree with that because at least that last part, Kevin Durant's money is solidified already. Like, he's under contract and it's the NBA, so it's guaranteed and it travels wherever he goes. I do think that it's a little bit odd to have a player who's that good who's going to get to the end of his career and he will have worn at least 5 different jerseys. That's a little surprising.
Actually, 6 now if you count the Sonics and the Thunder as 2 different ones.
Yeah, which okay. And yeah. Not really, but yeah.
I get
that's
it,
fair
yeah.
point.
Yep.
But yeah, the Sonics /OKC, then you go Warriors, then you go Brooklyn, then you go Phoenix, and now you're going to go Houston, and I don't know what's still ahead or what's going to happen next. That's a little bit odd, a little bit of a mercenary feel. Does it mean his jersey will never be retired? I don't know. I actually don't know what the Warriors will do with Kevin Durant because he was a part of championships. But look, I more look at it as like, that's the way it goes. I don't think that Kevin Durant is actually out there making decisions solely based on money. I think that he's reached a point in his career where he is chasing rings, but Kevin is also a little different. It feels sometimes like Kevin is chasing respect, And that, in the end, I understand, but also makes me a little sad. Because Kevin is one of those guys that I feel like is respected more than he realizes. But whether it was the basketball reasons that had him leave OKC, and then he arrives here, and whether there were Draymond things, Steve Kerr things, or fan base things, he suddenly wanted to leave. And the moment that he decided he wanted to leave the Warriors, it kind of feels like he spent the majority of the rest of his career wanting to leave wherever he is. You know, the pairing with Kyrie doesn't work. Phoenix ends up being a joke. And now you go to Houston next, and maybe they'll make beautiful music together. Maybe they won't. And he's probably not got more than two or three seasons left anyway. So I think that's what he's chasing, and that's a little bit unfortunate, quite honest with you.
It is, but if you're Kevin Durant right now, you're probably looking at, you know, having that one last run to win a championship. And if he wins one in Houston over the next, and I know he only has 1 year on his deal left, so he would have to sign an extension and stay. But if he goes to Houston and wins a title with that group, then that becomes much more of a Kevin Durant title than the previous two would that he won here in Golden State. You know, he came here, they had already won, and he won with the Warriors, but it was more like a ring chasing championship. Going to Houston with that group of the pups, Şengün and Amen Thompson and the rest of the guys who are still there, if he's able to get it done there, that for me would feel much more like a Kevin Durant title than the two that he won here.
Well, and yeah, because A, he's putting him over the top, and B, that's not a roster that's just going to overwhelm the league like the one that he did with the Warriors. All right, want everybody to hear this if you're just joining us. Ramona Shelburne, who's had a day, y'all. She's had a day, but she still found her way to Willard and Dibbs. And listen to what she said with regard to the Warrior offseason and specifically the Jonathan Kuminga setup right now. Listen closely. This is an important comment.
Does he really have a market? I know there's a couple of teams that are interested in him, but those would be sign-in trades. They don't have the cap space to get it done. And so do the Warriors want to even participate in those sign-in trades? If they do, what's the number? You know, it's probably three or four teams I've heard of that have some level of interest, but what is that level of interest, right? And do the Warriors want to keep him? And if so, what is the number? Is he, you know, if they make him an offer, that's less than the max, or maybe even less than what he was offered last year, which I think is far more likely. Does he scoff at that and then take a really long time to make a decision and then tie up their cap space? And that presents other problems. So that's the biggest thing that you have to look for, you know, but I know that they're working on a few things. I don't expect anything massive like we've seen. I mean, Jimmy Butler was really that move, right? But the Kuminga question is going to hang over everything because it has the potential to get messy.
Ooh, now this is wow. There's a lot there. There is a lot there. And I want to go back. There's a few things, but the first thing I want to highlight that Ramona said, which I don't think a lot of us have talked about yet. So everybody who's like, yeah, they'll probably keep him. You got to keep the asset. She pointed out it is highly likely that if they make Jonathan Kuminga a financial offer this offseason, it will be for less than what they offered him last offseason. And that is very unlikely to play well to Jonathan, especially because, and no matter what side you're on this, if you're Jonathan, yes, you got hurt, but you also, I would think, clearly believe one of the reasons I'm quote unquote worth less now than I was before last season is because you didn't play me. Your fault.
Right.
Not my fault. Your fault. And so I don't know that it's going to have that kind of acrimony or whatnot or dissent, but that's why she says potential. It really does have, this is a minefield that the two sides need to navigate.
Well, it could be messy if it happens that way where, you know, no other team gives them an offer that is, you know, worthy of the Warriors matching, and maybe no team will make him any offer at all. And so you go through that process, and then the Warriors are sitting there saying, okay, you're restricted and nobody made an offer for you, so now we're in the catbird seat because you're restricted, so we're going to go ahead and give you this, which is less than what we offered you before. It's less than what you want, but here's our offer. take it or leave it. And he has the option to just leave it, and or he can wait, and they can go back and forth. And so, and if he waits, then the Warriors are kind of stuck too, because you know, if they're going to lowball him and he's going to, you know, not come back right away, and the clock ticks and free agency's going on, and now the Warriors are kind of stuck in between a rock and a hard place because they can't go out there and extend an offer to anyone else while they're waiting for Kuminga. So that's how it could get messy.
I think you just pointed to the second big thing, and it's the word wait. Like that, it, we've talked so much about, oh, Jonathan's got no leverage here, and he doesn't have much, but that would be one play to create some. That would be, now I don't know that that would work out very well, but he could wait. Like, oh, that's the offer? Okay, I need to think about it.
Right.
For how long? I don't know, 6 weeks.
Exactly.
Oh, God. No, we can't do that. Well, then you would need to up your offer. If not, I just need some time. I need some time, Mike, to myself, maybe go on a little trip, backpacking trip, and think about things. And that obviously will not sit well with the Warriors, and then they could act accordingly if that's the play. But again, this is what I'm getting at. I would predict that Jonathan is headed elsewhere solely because I don't see all of these ideas meshing right now. I don't think the Warriors want to pay big dollars to Jonathan. I don't even think they want to pay him what they offered him last year. I don't think Jonathan's going to like that. And then, in the end, if you do just serve up to your fan base, hey, we re-signed Jonathan Kuminga. What's your offseason? Well, that's it. We got Jonathan back. It feels so unsatisfying, just the dramatic fan side of us. It's so unsatisfying that I got to feel like they are knocking on other doors, at least to start.
Right. And I mean, you can knock on those doors, but until you resolve the Kuminga part of it, and that's what Bobby Marks said to us earlier a couple weeks ago, where, you know, everything kind of spins off of the Kuminga decision. Either it's a sign and trade or a sign and keep. And until you have that box checked, you really can't go forward and do much of anything. And, you know, Ramona kind of echoed that today when she said it's really about Kuminga. And I mean, that's kind of your off season there. Either, you know, you sign him, you make a decision. And I think for the Warriors, the most convenient thing to do would be to have somebody really want him, and you sign and trade him, and you get something for him, and then that's done. Or you can sign him for whatever amount you feel comfortable with, and he would, you know, check that box, and then you can move forward. The worst thing for the Warriors would be for this thing to drag out to where it becomes untenable.
Yeah,
I don't think it will. Yeah.
I think that they would push it in a different direction if it goes that way.
Right. And I don't know what direction that would be, other than, you know, here's our offer and either you take it or you don't. And then,
well,
you know,
if you've got three or four other interested teams, that's somewhere to start. You get on the phone and figure it out. And if that leads to having more money to spend on other things, then it does. Big Smooth in Oakland. Hi, Big Smooth. What are you doing?
Man, I am driving on the Bay Bridge back to Oakland. But listen, man, considering what Houston has just done, they've got KD who can steal. He's got to go at least. He's going to average at least 24. Didn't give up hardly anything. They gave up a bag of now and later. An Abba Zabba. Kuminga doesn't even move the needle anymore. If we don't do something big like Giannis, if we don't do something big, it's not going to matter because Houston is loaded. OKC has, I think, 20. They're going to be good for stack for 4 or 5 years. It doesn't matter what Kuminga wants to do. It's irrelevant. If we don't do something big, dynasty's over. I'm sorry. It has to be like a big move or we can't compete with what's coming in the West. So Kuminga, Skuminga, doesn't matter. A 6'7 guy who dunks every now and then, we need way more than that. So trade him. Move him now. I don't even care anymore because we have to do something to match what Houston or counter what they've done. And Kuminga's worthy stays or goes is not going to be – it's not going to matter anyway. So I don't know. What do you guys think about that?
Well, Big Smooth, here's what I would say at least, and thank you for the call. I think that I think you're a little hot under the collar about this, more so than is realistic. Like when you say a big move, I don't think they have that in them. I don't think their numbers match up. I don't think the availability of others is out there. Now, I don't know what you would define as a big move. I think there could be a move, a significant one, but not one that amounts to a blockbuster trade. Every time somebody says that, I'm going to keep reminding them, and Ramona said this too. The Warriors made their blockbuster trade already. They already did it. You don't get to just keep doing them every 6 months. They made it. They got Jimmy Butler. Are there other moves to be made? Yes. But the other thing I want to caution off of what you just said, Big Smooth, was he's basically like, well, Houston did X, so now we need to do Y. I would really caution the Warriors, and I don't think they will, over being reactive off of that. That's going to go the way it's going to go. Houston was already good. Now they're going to be good, probably better, but we'll see. I love one thing in particular that Dunleavy said today, which is that we will run our own race. We are not racing against any other team. We will run our own race the way we want to run it. I think it's important to play it that way.
And you have no choice but to play it that way, honestly. Like, if you want to be OKC, a team that is young and deep and vibrant and athletic, okay, you can do that. Well, you've got Jimmy and Steph and Draymond making a combined $135 or $140 million next year. Okay, so that would mean Draymond and Jimmy, they both get traded for young, athletic, cheaper wings and whatnot. You are pot committed into running your own race. And running your own race is you've got old, and old. You got three old guys making a ton of money, and you have to surround them with whatever you can surround them with. And right now that's Buddy Hield and, you know, TJD and Quentin Post and, you know, Guy Santos and Pods and the rest of it. You can't be OKC. You can't be Houston. You have to be who you are, which is pot committed on three old guys and do your best around them. So Mike Dunleavy's right. You have to run your own race, and the race that you're running is this.
We have a very special caller.
Oh, really?
Very, very special caller.
Is it Friday already?
No.
Okay.
No.
Oh, so no. No.
No. No.
Yeah.
No. No. In fact, I will go out on a limb and say that this caller, when brought on the air, will not yell.
Okay.
Or make funny noises or any of that stuff.
I can't see the call screener board, but I know. You have me thinking
Are
about one certain caller.
Are you kidding me?
No, that's not what
no, Friday.
No, no.
And
yeah.
It's usually this time of, hey, guys, I'm at the dog park.
No, it's not that easy.
Good dog, good dog. My Gene in Oakland is elite, by the way.
It is very good. I will, in fact, let this caller know that there has been both text conversations and verbal conversations about having him on today as a possibility because of all of the injuries. And as fate would have it, he just decided, yeah, I would like to talk about this situation with Willie and Dibby. Ladies and gentlemen, let's say hello to Doc Pandia live on Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Hey, Doc, what's up?
How you guys doing? You know, I'm always listening to you, and I figured, you know, I leave work and you're talking about the injuries. I'd say, let me call in. Doc P from Oakland calling in.
Okay.
I love it, Doc P.
In Oakland. Yeah, we're very appreciative. So, yeah, what are your thoughts on half the league seemingly going out with Achilles tears?
Yeah, you know, if you look at, you know, over the past 20, 25 years, there have been about 45 Achilles tears over a 25-year period. If you look at this.
Well, I thought it would be a more. Oh, there you are. Sorry, Doc. Reboot. We lost you there for about 6 seconds.
No problem. No, I was saying that, you know, over the past 20, 25 years, there's only been about 45 Achilles tears in the league. Now, suddenly this past season, you see 8 and then 3 in the playoffs. So clearly there's something going on. And I totally agree with you guys. I think the number one factor is AAU basketball. These players are coming in the league. So much more wear and tear. You're seeing the average age of injury dropping down. So absolutely, I think it's AAU basketball. And then load management hurt them in this other way is where suddenly during the season, these players are not playing a lot of minutes. Then they go into the playoffs. Their minutes increase tremendously, which has been shown to increase injury risk. And then they're playing these games every other night. So that leads to number two, their injury risk. And the third is the game is just more explosive. I know everyone always brings up the point of, oh, look at back in the 80s and 90s, these players weren't getting hurt. The game's different. They're stressing their bodies more, and they're coming in with so much more mileage. So I think all these factors really have to make the league look at what are they going to do to decrease his injuries, maybe changing the schedule, giving more time in the playoffs. But most importantly, they have to go down to the youth level and make sure the players that are coming into the league aren't as worn down, so 20 and 25-year-olds aren't tearing their Achilles. It's a big problem.
So what is the solution, Doc? Because they're not going to play fewer games, and the playoffs have only gotten expanded with the play-in tournament. And youth basketball, and you know this being a parent yourself, like the pressure on these youth programs to develop these stars. So how do we go about offsetting some of these things?
So I think, you know, what the NBA can do is, I think, you know, they're never going to decrease the season, but I think if they extend out the period of time between games and the playoffs, I think that will help to decrease some of that minute injury risk. I think more and more youth coaches are starting to understand, because they're seeing the kids who are young, 10, 11, and 12, get those severe injuries. So they're like, wait, I want to win, but the way that I'm going to win is keep my kids healthy. And I think when they start realizing it's not just impacting these 2 to 3% who go on to play in the league, but the kids that they're coaching right now, and it's going to make them better and more successful, I'm starting to see that trickle down. But I think this current crop of players have already gone through that program of playing year-round starting at age 8. So I think that's where we can start making the change over the next 10 to 15 years.
Doc, not fair at all for me to bring this up, but I want to ask you, because I was not in favor of it at the time, but with all of these injuries, and if we all agree that overuse is a big part of them, can we look at the Steph Curry injury that took place, and what is your perspective on the fact that he played in the Olympics year prior, and what effect that may have had?
Yeah, I think that absolutely had an impact. I think we talked about it when he was in the playoffs, and one of the things when he was in the Olympics last year, and I was concerned that, you know, you don't have that normal offseason. You need to rest your body no matter what sport you're playing. So even though that in and of itself may not have, like, led to his hamstring kind of breaking down, it was more load on the body. So absolutely, that, as you mentioned, the offseason needs to be an offseason. Players in the 80s and 90s did nothing in the offseason. Yeah, maybe they were running a little bit or things like that, but not players are training so intensely. And when you see these players get these non-contact injuries, it's because their body's breaking down. So absolutely, I think the Olympics did play a role for an older player like Curry, unlike some of those other players, in terms of his body breaking down.
Doc, it's always great to have you on, man. Thank you so much for breaking us off a phone call.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime, guys. Take care.
Okay, there it is. Doc P in Oakland.
Yes.
Joining us here on Willard and Dibbs.
Fantastic. And, you know, it's a great breakdown, and I just can't help but think about what a conundrum it is for basketball, because if you're a young player who has a lot of upside, you're going to want to play and play and play and play year round at AAU and all the rest of it. And then you get to a spot where, you know, you've played so much that bad things could potentially happen.
All right. More people want to weigh in. 888-957-9570 is the number. We're sponsored by Safeway, and this is Willard and Dibbs.
You know what I'm about to do right now? I'm about to take my shoes off in public. Whoa.
Now, back to Willard and Dibbs on 95.7 The Game.
Like, I'm sure we've done a lot of interviews with people before who didn't have shoes on, but I don't know if anyone's ever told us that.
Whoa.
And then followed up with a picture.
Yeah, no, that was a first.
Yep.
That was a first.
I'm about to take my shoes off in public.
Yeah.
And that's okay. I was going to ask you about, like, how do you feel about either flip-flops or Birkenstocks, open-toed footwear on an airplane?
How do I feel about open-toed footwear on an airplane?
Like, if you're going to catch a flight, and it's going to be a four-hour flight, and you walk on with flip-flops or Birkenstocks. Grandy, you're shaking your head no.
Well, I feel if you're wearing flip-flops or, like, Birkenstocks throughout the day, that's fine. I would prefer that over wearing, like, tennis shoes or whatever with socks and then taking those tennis shoes off. If your shoes or your toes have just been out all day, that's fine.
Interesting.
But if your toes have been covered up by socks and shoes and then you take those shoes off, no, please, no.
Oh, I'm with him on that. Yes. Yeah, because those smell.
So
I'm
sitting.
If you take a shower and put on your as they would call them in Hawaii, your slipper.
Sure.
If you just
your
do
sleeper.
That. Yeah, if you just put on your sleepers.
Right.
You're fine.
So
like fresh out of the
I'm
shower.
I'm sitting
like,
in 11A, and you're in the middle in 11B, and I get on the plane with shoes and socks on, and, you know, we take off. And I take my shoes off and I take my socks off, and now I'm rocking the bare feet.
Oof.
That's a problem.
Probably.
Now, if I come on.
Major problem.
Yeah. And you're an 11C, Granny. Yeah. I apologize. Yeah. Yeah. And you two hate me.
I ain't going to be an 11B for very long.
So if I get into 11A and I walk in with Birkenstocks on the plane, I walk in with my Birks and my feet are already out and about, then that's okay.
Yeah, we're good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah.
Or if you're a weirdo who can wear shoes and socks on a travel day and work your way through that mess and somehow do it without your feet stinking, well, then do whatever you want.
Right.
But most people don't operate that way.
Yeah.
But if your feet are out of the shower and then have been in the open air all day with open-toed shoes, you're probably fine.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't care what you do as long as it doesn't infiltrate my nose.
Agreed. And I happen to have, I don't want to get too personal about my feet, but my feet are incredibly fragrant. They don't stink at all. Like, under no circumstance do my feet stink.
I'll take your word.
Yeah, I don't.
I mean,
but we're not going to find out.
I'm just telling you.
I'm going to believe you only because I will never have the evidence to not believe you.
As a foot aficionado, and for those of you longtime listeners, you know that I actually had to give a foot massage to Lorenzo Neal live on the air, a 10-minute foot massage, and I can tell you that my feet are in better shape than Lorenzo Neal's feet.
Okay, like, I'll be the first to tell you right now that if I do a whole day with shoes and socks on and then I take them off and I stick them near your face, you ain't gonna like that.
No,
you are not gonna like that at all.
As my daughter would say, when we have to put a diaper in her diaper pail, it's stinky in my nose. Okay. That's her go-to.
Abe, who's now 18, one of his famous quotes from when he was probably about Mila's age, driving out on Highway 5 and rolled right by Harris Ranch.
Mm-hmm.
And he just started, you could kind of see it, like he's looking around. He was confused. Confused. And he started like looking down. He looks at, and then he finally touched his nose with his right hand. Touched his nose. Dad, what's in my nose? Yeah, nothing's in your nose, buddy.
Yep.
Those are cows.
Yeah.
And they stink.
No doubt.
Yeah. So
I just was asking about the flight because I was going somewhere, San Diego, with my wife. And my go-to always when I fly is to wear sandals or Birkenstocks. That way when you go through, you don't have to worry about untying your shoes and taking them off.
That's true.
And she said, oh, no, we don't do that. We wear shoes in this family. And I said, huh? And, you know.
We don't do that.
No, we don't do that.
I don't like it when people use that sentence.
Well.
We don't do that. You don't do that.
Thus, I don't do that either.
You speak for me?
Well.
Who's we? Who are we doing? What is this we thing? What are you, a nun? Like, what do you mean? Like, we don't do that here.
Right, the royal we.
Yeah. Like, maybe you don't.
Apparently, we dress up for flights.
We. Oh, you know what?
Like, for me, I was always like, I would go,
that's
like,
a weird thing to me. Christy, like,
it's old school.
It is. And she would never enforce it, but I know she kind of digs it.
Right.
But I don't even understand it.
Dressing up for flights.
Why the hell would I get fancy to go do what I would argue is the least fancy thing on planet Earth?
Sit in a chair for hours and don't move.
Folded up with no space.
Yep.
Like, I mean, no, I can't think of anything that calls for more casual behavior than an airplane. I can't think of anything.
Bro, I'm with you.
Like, we're going to go to Europe. I'm gonna be snoring and drooling on you here shortly.
In a suit.
I mean, what on earth are we talking about here?
I'm with you.
Yeah, man. T-shirts and shorts. That's
just
what.
Just one more quick aside. Fire away. As we continue on.
Who gives a crap?
I was thinking earlier about height.
Whoa.
Like, and the perfect height. Because you're 6'2", right?
Yeah.
I was thinking about being 6'2", and how that is probably the most perfect height you can be. Because when you're 6'2", and granted, I'm 5'8", so I will never know what being 6'2 is like. But when you're 6'2", you're tall enough to be athletic enough in many, many ways, but not so tall that things like the airplane
right.
or a smaller car, both of my kids are 6 foot two, and I had one of them, Keon, in my car yesterday. I have a Honda Fit, and I'm looking at him in my Honda Fit, which is a smaller car, yep. and the seat's all the way back, and he's got it partly reclined, and I'm looking at him, and I'm thinking, if you're 6'3", you don't fit in this car, but at 6'2", that's about going to be it for me and you yep. in this car. And so I was thinking about that today. 6'2 is probably the ideal height in many, many ways.
I've never been any other height except for when I was on my way to 6'2",
right.
but I do enjoy it. Like it's, I'm tall enough to do things like reach the stuff on the shelves
yep.
And that kind of stuff. But yeah, like,
and as an athlete, like being 6'2", you could be, you know, you could play the wing, you could play the low post depending on the level and whatnot. You know, if you're good enough, you could be a point guard.
Yeah,
and
but like very, very rarely do I have to, like, I don't know, do that kind of the tall guy bend in order to get
right,
under doorways
right.
or things like that. My buddy Scott, who has a home in Tahoe, has like a chandelier that's a little too low. I have walked into that at times.
Yeah.
But it's not bad. You get over it. You move on in life. Other than that, I'm with you. I like yeah. my height.
Well, and I'm thinking about the great Carter Chickering, who is one of our great staff members here. And Grandy, is Carter, he's got to be 6'8", right? Carter Chickering?
I think 6'7".
Okay.
Yeah, around there.
He, whatever he is, like, it's great because I'm sure he was a wonderful basketball player and he can do a lot of things as a taller athlete, but you got to spend your whole day at 6'7". And that means a lot of the things that are created in our world, they're not built for him. And at the same time, like being like 5'3 or 5'4, which I was for the majority of my high school years, that's kind of a bummer when you're too short. And if you're too tall, so 6'2 for me, I thought about this earlier.
Right,
I'm like,
all right.
6'2 is probably the sweet spot.
I'll talk to my people here in 6'2ville
yeah.
and see if we can get you there. Well,
yeah, it's a little late. Because, well, Grandy, you're yeah. just about that, right?
Yeah, 6'2, not quite 6'3.
Yeah. Yeah.
When I was growing up, I was, I remember my dad asking me, how tall would you want to be ideally? And I settled on 6'2.
Yeah.
And that's where I finished.
Ideal free throw shooting height. 6'2".
Among other things, too.
Yeah.
But yeah.
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 Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, that's just, that's what you think about when you're 5'8". You think about, not like, to dream about it in your 50s. Like, it's not going to happen. There's no pill for that. But
not with that attitude.
I just was thinking earlier. I'm like, you know what? 6'2 would probably be it for, like, the sweet spot of everything.
Before we leave, let's go to Mike in Fremont. Mike, how tall are you?
I am actually 6'2", guys.
You're damn right, Joe. I had a feeling.
Man.
I just had a little feeling.
No, I'm so jealous.
You deserve it.
Right on point. And guys, I'm wearing Birks at the moment.
You're
so,
damn right. Are you on a plane?
Yeah, but where are you flying to later?
No, I'm not flying. I'm flying. The fun one, though, is when the kids wear the socks and the Birks at the same time. That's just weird.
You could call it fun.
Yeah,
you could call it ugly.
You call my son because
yeah.
that's what
yeah.
he would rock the socks yeah, and the exactly. Jesus cleats. Yeah,
there you go. I just wanted to talk about Kevin Durant. I think we're getting a little. I agree with Mike Dunleavy when he says we just got to run our own race, because I feel like we freaked out. Like everybody freaked out like this when Kevin Durant went to Brooklyn. And everyone's like, oh, we got to keep up with Brooklyn. We got to keep, and nothing happened. And then we freaked out when he went to Phoenix. And, oh, look, he's with Booker, and he's with this and that, and nothing happened. And I don't know. I just don't see what's going to happen in Houston. They've lost their best defender. They've gained a shooter, sure, but if they can't play the defense, and I don't know what KD's never been good when he's been the guy. Right? Like, even when he was here, he was one of the guys. But when he's had to be the guy, it hasn't really worked out. So, again, Dunleavy, I'm with it. He's run your race first and then see what happens. At least see what happens when we get to the season first.
Yeah, Mike, I hear you. I see KD maybe a little bit differently. Just because they didn't win a ring in Oklahoma City, for example, I think that worked out pretty well. They were pretty damn good, and he was the guy. I hear where you're coming from, though. Grandy, what are you about to do? What's about to happen here?
We're going to hear from Ramona Shelburne.
Damn right.
Up next.
Smoky as she was, she's still going to be up in here on Best of the Game with Grandy, which is brought to you by Fremont Bank. here for you, here for good. Do you want to do it again tomorrow?
I can't wait till tomorrow.
All right, let's do it again tomorrow. And by the way, George Kontos was in the green room, but he's been kicked to tomorrow. So George Kontos tomorrow, among others. For Dibs, for Grandy, for Lucas, I'm Mark. Shoot your shot. That's all you got.